Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024, performing this year.
Yo, it's Doja Cat.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening? Your boy Offset. I will be live June 2nd.
Sexy Red.
This your boy Mac Man.
What's up, rap world? This is Rat Man.
Sleepy Hollow.
Yo, what up, my people? It's your boy David.
T Grizzly. 41. Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Ebro in the Morning with Laura Stiles and Rosenberg.
Papoose is on the program. Give it up for our bro, Papoose. Long peace, time peace. We ain't seen the bro.
Pap.
Poos, it's Ebro, Laura Rosenberg. Papoose, good to see you, sir. I think first and foremost, thank you. Thank you for the work as an MC that you put in 2021.
Thank you, man.
Putting out an hour or a project, let's call it, every single month, right?
Yeah, but thank you for the post you made, man. That was a big deal, man. That was a good look for me. You made a post on your gram when you basically gave acknowledgement to some of the work I did.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I don't know if you remember.
Nah, I didn't remember, but
I mean, it was from the heart. That mean it was genuine.
Yeah, I wasn't. You know but what I'm saying? I will say, if you did not know that Papoose did that, because there's a high possibility that you, if you don't follow Papoose or you know, you ain't off in it, you know, following MCs. The reoccurring theme, I forget the name of the song, about lawyers.
Oh, Law Library.
Law Library, son?
Law Library, yeah.
Part 9?
Yeah, I'm deep in Law Library saga. It's like 9 installments.
Part 9, no, I think it was on the July project.
Yeah, July. I think it's actually, you hit it on the head, yeah.
Well, and the reason that strikes a chord with me, because if you have any family members that have been incarcerated, right? My dad was always at the Law Library.
Oh, really?
Bruh, my dad was always at the Law Library fighting his case.
Wow.
Like, you know, because he'd be like, yo, this lawyer ain't working for me. I'm going to represent myself.
Exactly.
Go to the Law Library. Bruh, if it wasn't every day, it was every week. Mm-hmm. It felt like my dad would. But anyway, the way you broke it down in there.
Definitely.
And understanding the law. Mm-hmm. And I think that while, you know, people could, you know, you've always wanted the big smash hit and you've always wanted these things, but what you've contributed as an MC to breaking down words and the way you've used your gift of wordplay and music.
Right.
I think, you know, I just wanted to give you a flower.
Nah, thanks. Though. I appreciated that. And Law Library was inspired by life experiences, you know, growing up. My cousin, a lot of my different family members, my close friends, unfortunately, were becoming incarcerated. And I would be out here trying to help them get out. So I would just research their cases. They would give me details, and I would share information. They would go to the Law Library inside the facility, and this information would really help them come home. So I was like, wow, man, I want to share this through the music.
Now, did you have any family members that were actually successful in using the Law Library to get
Even the songs. Do you know how many brothers come out from the penitentiary and run down on me on the street? And they like, yo, listen, I want to thank you for them Law Libraries. It wasn't for, you know, Law Library.
Because you're pointing people in the direction to get the...
I wouldn't have beat my case, so I wouldn't have come home. So I'm breaking down, like, real technicalities of the law. Word.
Not only that, Pap, the whole year, Pap, let me give you some of these stats, Laura and Ebro. Did a record with Wiz Khalifa. He had a record with Swizz, of course. The Swizz beat was fire, and the Wayne feature, incredible. The amount of features. Here's some producers. This is over the last year that and someone who put together one project in the last year, Pap. This blows my mind that you did this for 12. He had Swizz, Timbo, Jazzy Faye, Jermaine Dupri, Kool & Dre, Large Pro, Pete Rock, Premier. More than that, features with Wayne, Fab, Anthony Hamilton, Wiz, Nelly, The Game, Meth, 2 Chainz, Busta, Capadonna. I mean, it goes on and on and on, bro. That's an incredible year. How long did you set up for that year? Or was it all just happening live time?
It all happened live, man. Like, even like hearing you say it, even when I look back, I can't even believe I did that. I was able to do that.
Bro, like, Rosenberg would myself, walk like, in here stressed. Stressed when he was working on his
one project.
Nah, it's not easy. It's not. Let me tell you something. My wife hated me in 21, man. She was like, yo, like, bro, sometimes I wouldn't even work through the whole month. I would wait till like, let's say April 30th. And I'm like, I got to do this project. I did November in one day.
Wow.
I did that shit in one day.
And you just locked in morning to night.
Yep. And that's what I would do. Like, I would chill out for the month, and then I would pick one day or maybe a day and a half where I'd just be locked in. I have my ideas, communicating with artists, communicating with producers. But when it was time to actually lay it down, because you know why? some people say, you know, you got to plan ahead. You can't be a last minute person. But when you plan that, when you lock yourself in too early, you close the door on new opportunities and new creativity. I only got 30 days, so I need all the time I can to create the dopest material. So,
and do you? It seems like you like the pressure of the moment too.
I think so too. Yep. Yeah, that's what my man Vinny be saying to me. He said, "Yo, Pap, you perform best under pressure." I be sitting there like, "Yo, they waiting for the project tomorrow, 31st, and I ain't laid one song. It's the 30th."
And I said I was gonna deliver.
That's insane.
It inspires me. It inspires me, man. And it came out dope every time. I was blessed.
Talk about your fan base. I think it's good to give context to those hardcore fans that you. I mean, you have fans that have. I mean, rode for you since day one.
Yeah.
That are fans of your ability as a writer and an MC and your bookings and, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I'm going to go back to it because we've talked about it before, your desires to be, obviously, to have the big radio hits in the mainstream, whatever.
Absolutely.
But you have something that people who have radio hits don't have, you know what I'm saying, and will never have.
Wow. It's deep. It's deep like that. Yeah, thanks to all my fans, man, because it's very interesting. When I first said I was going to do this, a lot of people was like, yo, it's not going to work. Like, I had a distributor who turned his back on me like, yo, you overlapping yourself. You can't do it. I spoke to you one time around, like, maybe March, and you was like, yo, I don't know what you're doing, but just keep flooding platforms. You was like, yo, keep flooding it with more. So that's, you might not know, but shit like that is inspiring.
Right.
It tells me, okay, I'm on the right path. But big special thanks to the fans because the money just started coming in like crazy.
Well, now you see how it stacks up, right?
It's ridiculous. I made a lot of money. 21, man. I'm talking about like every Monday my check is there through TuneCore. Shout out to TuneCore.
But I wanted, you know, now when you say that, hopefully it clicks for people. Mm-hmm. Why there's so much music coming out all the time.
Yeah.
Right? Because a lot of artists know what you found out.
Well, I don't know if we knew it up here. I feel like other regions.
No, they did. The South, like, that's why Migos would put out 25, 30 records.
Man.
Chris Brown putting out 45 joints.
Off the record, you know what I'm saying? I know it's on the record, but when I did the last Flex freestyle I did, he told me that. He's like, yo, Pap, they working, man. They working. Like, you know what I'm saying? These artists in these other regions, they outworking us. And I just started analyzing. I said, you know what? Some of this might be trash, but they're working. Some of it's good, you know what I'm saying?
But the way people consume music now, right? Mm-hmm. Not all people, but at least the like active 18 to 24 college kid.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Video game kid, whatever. They streaming all day. It's all day long.
And it's about what's new. Like, it's about what's new. So if you're not consistent, you're out of here.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Although I read a crazy article yesterday about how streaming's interesting because, by and large, while the new stuff is big, over time, it's the old stuff that wins. 70% of listening is going to old stuff.
Really?
And that's beating most
catalog,
of the new stuff.
But see, it's that article's interesting. I saw a lot of people sharing that article. Peep in that article that they don't define what old is. Anytime you hear people talk about catalog, ask them what they mean. Because catalog can be 6 months. Catalog is technically, I think, 6 months old.
Right.
Is that, you know, so I say the word catalog to you. Do you think 6 months ago?
Right.
Of course not.
Nah, you think 5 years, 10 years.
You think over a long, you know what I'm saying? You think like Nas, Biggie.
So to that point, while they're just looking at the metric of like, oh, wow, these records that are 6 months to, you know, infinity old are doing better than the new ones, what you're doing where you flooded the system, in a few months, that's your catalog.
Absolutely, and that's what happened.
And it's still going.
Nah, it's a fact. One day, somebody was actually bigging me up. He was like, yeah, you know, Pap got a certain amount of mixtapes. He has 4 albums, or at the time, 3 albums. And I was like, damn, I only got 4 albums? I was like, nah, I got to get busy. And I did 12 in 1 year. So now they can't say I got 4 albums. I didn't like how that sounds.
Well, and then now I want to play the song. You closed the year with this remix where you took the Lil Wayne record, but then you added Remy.
Yes.
Busta.
2 Chainz.
2 Chainz.
Yes.
And this record's fire.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. The video drops tonight, this evening, 6 o'clock. We got the whole video done, man. Shout out to Will Smith and Tandy. They shot that thing.
Who?
My brothers Will C and Tanner, they shot the video.
Will C and Tanner, I'm not up on it.
We shot the they doing a lot of work for a lot of people right now in the game. We shot a different part of the video in all different states, man. So shout out to 2 Chainz, man. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to Lil Wayne. Shout out to Timbaland on the track. Busta. Big shout out to Busta, man.
Thought I was gonna stop the remix.
Yes.
I mean, everybody's barring it up on here. And this is one of those records that Timbaland gave you, one of those beats that doesn't need a hook. The beat is the hook.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Where it's like, you know, Timbaland has that thing where he could catch a sound and it repeats in the song in a way where you're like, yo, that's the hook already.
Timbaland is a GOAT, man. Shout out to Timbaland, man, embracing me and showing me. Dream come true to work with guys like that.
Now, real talk, you think your wife bodied you on this record? She was barring it. She might have bodied you on this one, son.
She's the best in the world, man. I can't rap better than her. You kidding me? No way, man.
I wonder if Swizz should roll out the husband-wife versus him versus his wife.
Ooh.
Honestly, that
versus Remy.
That would be fire.
And then maybe maybe Hov and B will show up for that one.
That'd be crazy. I know I'm getting bodied.
Summer Jam 2024 performing this year.
Yo, it's Doja Cat.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening? It's your boy Offset.
I will be live
June 2nd.
Sexy Red.
This your boy Mac, man.
What's up, rap world? This is Rat Man.
Sleepy Hollow.
Yo, what up, my people? It's your boy David.
T Grizzly. 41. Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
Have you considered, like, yo, I would love to do a versus, but with who?
Oh, I'll do a versus with anybody. I don't care. It don't matter.
Yo, your man's went up there and took a piece of Kendrick's set. He was like, that's a Summer Jam. Yo, here's the Summer Jam headliner.
He headlined.
Yo, we didn't even cut him off either. I was like, man, let it go, man. Kendrick handed him the mic, man. Let it go, man.
Yo, listen, Pap would Kendrick, do a versus. Man. Pap would do a versus with no pre-recorded songs. Like,
he would just
want
to perform.
Yeah,
he would
want to perform.
For an
hour.
We could go. Like, it don't matter. You know what I'm saying?
On Kendrick, I just want to bring it back around because, you know, where Kendrick is now.
Right.
But talk about those early days. You know, Kendrick coming to New York. Like, you know, I don't think it gets covered a lot, but I think it's important for people to understand it. Early on when Kendrick, you know, Rosenberg supporting him on a real late, you bringing him around, like he was really making
definitely.
Sure that he had his roots with some real MCs.
Kendrick was out here, he was definitely out here grinding, you know what I'm saying? Shout out to him. Basically, I took them all through Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Through Bed-Stuy, East New York, Brownsville. Took them on tour, took them through the hood, showed them love. Brought Kendrick out on my performance out in Long Island, and he came out and he killed it. So I'm actually happy to see what he was able to accomplish just starting off from that, just a kid from the West Coast coming to New York. Like, yo, show me around. You know what I'm saying? And I showed them love. So shout out to them. And
how did you guys initially meet? Like,
was that K Slay?
He was grinding. Yeah, Slay. You know, Slay is the gateway for a lot of artists. Like, and he was coming through Slay trying to get on. And Slay had a showcase, but it was my set.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually brought him out on my set. So I definitely met them through
Slay.
And
then he returned the favor at Summer Jam. Pap got that. Yo, that was so good, though. But then afterwards, everybody was like, Papoose, the headliner of Summer Jam.
I mean, you know, man. I was the most hated back then.
Me and Pap have a classic fight on the air right after that happened.
Oh, yeah.
What y'all fight about?
On YouTube.
When I called in, right?
I don't even remember. I think I was making fun of it in some way, and Pap called the station, and it was funny. It's on YouTube.
I mean, at the time, you was like kind of like teabagging Kendrick, so I was like, "Come on, bro."
Okay,
Kendrick is no.
We good now.
Rosenberg is notorious on Kendrick's scrotum.
He was doing too much. Yeah, I was like,
that's what he does.
I think it was the
I have played into this narrative.
It was the King of New York thing. He said he was the King of New York or some shit like that
on the Big Sean record.
Yeah, and then when I responded. Everybody, you know, started feeling sorry for him. Like, you didn't have to kill him that bad. You went too far.
He was like, yo, that's my man, but I'm from New York, and I got to do my
thing. Yeah, I was like, yo, what you talking about? Like, come on, I showed you through Brooklyn. I showed you love. You know what I mean? But shout out to Kendrick,
man.
That's over with.
Do you think, Pap, that you've... Because like Ebro said, we all meet people who are just Pap stans. Like, and you're a rapper's rapper. There are a lot of artists that appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that in general, though, you've gotten the props that you deserve? Are you satisfied with the way people see Papoose, or do you think your legacy doesn't get its due?
I'm definitely underrated. I agree. You know what I mean? A lot of my followers, supporters, and fans, they always said it for a long time. I definitely agree. But when I first became attracted to hip-hop, you know what I mean? Hip-hop is something you live, rap is something you do. I became attracted to the culture. And what I dreamed, like Biggie said, it was all a dream. What I always dreamed to be as a youngster, I always wanted to be nice, you know what I'm saying? And get my ideas and my philosophies like Law Library across the world, people overseas. So what I dreamed of being back then, I accomplished that. So to answer your question, yeah, I'm satisfied. I'm comfortable with that.
Are you now, we were talking before this conversation, because I know you're rich now.
Nah, I wish I was, man.
True.
Well, no, I mean, I will say this. You're wealthy based on my belief in wealth, which is looking at your family and the love in your home. I think that's real wealth, personally.
Thank you,
right?
Thank you, man. I agree.
But on top of that, you're able to provide a lifestyle for not only your wife and your family, but your kids and probably their kids based on business moves you have made.
No, absolutely, I agree, man. I just don't really like to carry it like
that. Of course.
It's so many poor people in the world and so many hard times, so I don't like to throw that in people's faces.
But what's important is...
But to agree with you, I mean, to elaborate on what you said, as far as family, you know, that strong foundation, that family structure, the loyalty and raising your child in a family environment, yes, I am rich.
But, you know, I agree with you on, like, throwing it in people's face, but I think also the work, though. Mm-hmm. Right? Because there's that part of it. There's the actual, like, yo, no, I put time in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can be inspired.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you see me sitting here. I haven't had the biggest, you know, I'm speaking like I'm you. I haven't had the biggest radio records in the world. You know what I'm saying? I haven't done all, but I am, my family and their family will be sustained from the work that I put in for the last, 20 years?
Yeah, maybe longer than that. You know, I can live in a mansion now with a pool and raise my daughter in that type of environment. You know what I'm saying? And like you said, people could be inspired. So inspiration purposes only, man. You know what I'm saying?
Do you, as an artist, who do you attribute this longer runway for a rapper?
What you mean?
To, like, meaning, you know, there was a time in rap where it was like, yo, once you got over 35, it was like...
Oh, yeah, man. Let me tell you something.
You know what I mean? But now, you look around, it's all the dudes that's 30, 35 plus, mostly, that's getting a serious run right now and doing it their way and having ownership, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you look at yourself, a Royce the 5'9", a 2 Chainz, I mean, obviously, Hove and these other individuals, Nas.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Only the artists only the whack rappers try to use the age as an excuse. You know what I mean? Your age don't make you nice. Mm-hmm. Your talent does. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Artists who aren't intimidated by other artists, you'll never hear them pull an age card. You know what I'm saying? So I agree with you. You know what I mean? You got a lot of artists who are up in age and they hella successful, still doing their thing, touring, getting money. You know what I mean? So like I said, your age don't make you nice. Your talent does. You know what I mean? So
do you see yourself...
And we get to live at a time... You get to live a time now, Pap, where, like, you don't have to see this ending anytime soon. You know, like, why? No, as I've said this for years, but no one asked Bruce Springsteen and Billy Joel to stop performing because they're too old. So
yeah, we
I'm tired
that.
Of us.
We're the only ones we throw away our legends. Quick, like,
right.
Yo, get about it.
And now you don't have to.
Nah, you don't.
So do you plan on doing this forever?
Nah, man, I don't. I don't plan on doing this forever because I've been doing this for so long. I want to just take some time out to just focus on my family. I'm talking about like 100%. You know what I mean? Where I'm not chasing the music career.
Wake up, make some eggs, drive to school, pick them up from school, do some homework.
But do you have like a passion that like, I don't know, it could be real estate. I don't know, something that we don't know. Do you invest in you know, are you in the crypto world?
Absolutely.
You know, what is it that drives you besides?
Definitely real estate. You know what I mean? I also have a transportation business where I provide transportation for different people, Sprinter vans, SUVs.
Oh, wow.
Oh, dope.
That's going real good. And I also got into the trucking business. So when you say passion, I ain't going to lie to you, my passion is music.
Yes.
But I do that stuff, you know what I mean? Because I, you know, to make money.
Right,
How long have these businesses been going?
Years now. I got into the trucking business years and years ago.
Really?
And maybe like a year and a half, 2 years ago, I got into the transportation business. That one is really good for me.
I think these conversations are important because we see a lot of young kids who get money fast and they don't use it. You know what I mean? They don't plan. You know what I mean?
I made that mistake when I was young, though.
Yeah.
So I always give the youth room for error. The ones who catch on early, man, salute. But when you're young, man, and you get money like that, you kidding me? You going shopping, man.
You making more money now than you ever made before?
Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt, man. Without a doubt. Television.
Because of the amount of stuff you're streaming?
This year, yeah, man. It's been unbelievable. television, I made a lot of money on. I made more money on television than I ever made in music.
That wedding joint was big for y'all.
Yeah, but that 21, though, 21, it kind of, it almost caught up. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
It was a great year, man. I've been successful.
Say that again, though. I think which people one? Need to marinate on that. You said, I got a lot of money on television.
Yeah,
and everybody saw it, and then we loved it. Everybody loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But in 21, where you put out 12 different projects.
Yes.
That money alone from being that active,
yes,
almost caught up with the money almost. You made from reality TV.
Absolutely, 100%. It's so consistent and it's still going. You know what I mean? January came, I was like, I'm ready to drop January part two and do this shit again this year. You know what I'm saying? Like
why not?
I know, man. I'm thinking about it, man. You know what happened was, I said in the beginning of 2021, I said, yo, listen, oh man, my bad.
Don't worry about it.
In the beginning of 2021, I said, yo, man, this is my last year rapping. What I'm going to do is to show love to my fans. I'm going to drop a project each month titled after the current month, and then I'm out of here. I'm gone. I'm retiring.
Oh, wow.
Yo, Jay Electronica hit me up. He was like, yo, you can't retire, man. You one of the last samurais. You know what I'm saying? Buster called me up. Buster was like, you not retiring. I'm not letting you retire. You know what I'm saying? Slade was in my ear. So these are people I respect, man. So many people I respect was like, nah, you can't do it. It can't happen. And then I had all the success.
Now you can't leave shit. It's like a gang. Nah, fam. You can't leave.
That
son.
Was Slay. Slay was like, nah, ain't no retirement.
Ain't no out.
Get the fuck out of here, man. Go out there and fix that in the media.
Word. Yo, that's fire. Yo, ladies and gentlemen, this brother Papoose is a lot of love. We've been through a lot with him.
You've been through
a lot in this game. You continue to show up and give to the culture. Do it your way and the right way. And I want to play that Law Library Part 9. That's one of my favorite. I for some reason, Part 9 stood out to me the most out of all of them.
Nah, that's crazy.
Maybe we might have to play his joint. My favorite one for the year might be the joint with you and Meth, man.
Shout out to Meth, man. Meth went crazy that on that joint, man. Big shout out to Meth. You know what I mean? Shout out to Standard Man on production on that.
Yo, so we won't get monthly this year. We'll maybe get seasonal.
Yo, you must be psychic. Because I said, yo, man, I want to do it again each month. And my wife was like, let me know so I can move out. She was like, nigga, you better do seasons or something. I was like, all right, man, I might do the seasons.
You know, a spring, summer,
right.
Fall.
I was thinking holiday. And she was like, you know how many holidays it? I was like, all right, man. She's like, you better go seasons. That makes sense.
Straight with seasons.
Yo, one time for our
happy
brother,
wife,
Pat
happy
Poose.
Life.
There you go. Listen to Remy. We don't want no smoke. Give it up, Pat Poose, one time, man. Man. Yes,
peace,
sir.
Y'all. Appreciate it for having me.
Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024 performing this year.
Yo, it's Doja Cat.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening? Your boy Offset.
I will be live
June 2nd.
Sexy Red.
This your boy Mac, man.
What's up, rap world? This is Rat Man.
Sleepy Hollow.
Yo, what up, my people? It's your boy David.
T Grizzly. 41. Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. In the morning with Laura Stiles and Rosenberg.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ebro Laura Rosenberg back on the program. Our friend Patrice Cullors, give it up one time. What's happening? How are you?
I'm doing well. It's so good to see y'all. I've been coming on the show now since my first book, which was in 2018, and I feel like your family.
Well, we feel the same about you, which is why we keep having you back on, because if we didn't like you, we'd be like, yeah, nah, we're good. We don't have to do this. But this conversation is very important. The book's coming out January 25th, and it's called An Abolitionist's Handbook. It breaks down abolition in the simplest terms and shares with readers how the use of abolition as a form of self and collective care. Can you give us, let's dig into that, because obviously most people learned about abolition with regard to slavery in this country. But, you know, it's in more of its more specific terms, an abolitionist today would be working on what exactly?
It's a great question. And I do need to say that, you know, we come from a long lineage, abolitionist of folks who have been thinking about how we deal with accountability, not from a place of punishment. And our dear elder and friend and mentor Angela Davis, actually, I would say, is the person who really launched the new modern day abolitionist movement. And, you know, much of her work has really challenged our idea of using cages as a way to deal with social ills. And so in the simplest terms, a modern day abolitionist is trying to get rid of police, prisons, jail system, courts, surveillance, and detention centers. But I want to say that it's more than that. Modern day abolitionists are trying to dream big. We're trying to dream of a world where everybody gets their needs met, and we don't end up punishing people for oftentimes people having mental illness, drug addiction, and things like that.
Mm. Well, I think it's, you know, important too, because there's this adverse reaction that too many people have when they hear about abolishing jails or abolishing police or abolishing these things, because they have not been raised, and by raised, I mean programmed, to even be able to think beyond just getting rid of people because they don't fit neatly into society's expectations.
That's right.
Or because, and as you talked about, like mental health or economic situations or whatever those situations are that create an atmosphere for a human being to not be able to cope with what society has done to them.
That's
and
right.
So we throw them away.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so the process of getting to this big idea and this big dream that you mentioned Angela Davis has, and the one you are writing in this book about more purposefully and specifically, is a journey and a work. It's not happening tomorrow.
Right. It's not like one bill you're fighting to change. This is a.
But I think there's a big misunderstanding, right? Because even going back to when activists were saying defund the police, people thought it was going to happen the next week. Like, it was just like tomorrow we're yanking all of the money without a plan and without any support systems or anything that's going to help us deal with the damage that has been done to human beings by this country's practices.
So can I ask you, Patrice, what do you say? So obviously, you know, you're in addition to being an amazing person fighting for the cause, you're also a fancy, successful person who meets with cool, fancy people. I'm sure you're at dinner parties where people are sipping a Merlot and they're chatting. And they go, so Patrice, tell us about the abolition. How would that work? I mean, where would people go? Like, what's your basic sort of answer when people ask you about what it is that you want to see happen?
So I think exactly like Ibra was saying, and, you know, I really appreciate this question because it's a question we get all the time. There is a process, and I call it the abolitionist journey. So one, I think the false idea that we can't have abolitionist policy is a big problem. As you remember with the defund movement, and for me and many of us as abolitionists, defund is just our route towards abolition. Defund isn't abolition, but it was really upsetting and challenging when, you know, our former president Obama went on, you know, on social media and said defund is not the way, right? Essentially, totally, after 20 million people were in the streets and, you know, folks were saying defund, it was almost, you know, simultaneously where he was saying, you know, stop saying defund, it's not going to happen, we can't do policy around defund. That's not true. We could totally do policy around abolition. And that process looks like a couple things. Number one, let's look at our budgets, right? Let's look at our police budgets. Let's look at our jail and prison budgets. And let's see where we can actually cut. Do we need all that money for policing and imprisonment? No. Where does that money need to go? So I'm going to just take the city I live in because it's where I've done most of my work and where I fought. For a decade, we fought to stop $3.5 billion jails. And so many people had the same questions that you hit me with, Rosenberg, you know, what are we going to do and what happens and, you know, how do we do this thing? And what we kept saying to people is, we have $3.5 billion, just reinvest it into the community. We need more clinics. We need more green space. And it took a decade for elected officials to finally be brave enough to say, you know what, you're right. We can't invest in this jail. We need to invest in the community. And so that's one phase of what we can be doing is investing back into the community and creating more space for people who are houseless, who have severe mental illness, who are impacted by drug use. There are so many ways that we can create new institutions to take care of people so they're on their road to health and recovery.
I want to point out, too, for the audience, you know, we have a lot of people on this program, and but we also there's a lot of people we don't have on this program. And I want to point out that if you look at the pattern of the people that we try to talk to on this program, it's people who are trying to do things differently than the way we've been doing them that got us to this point. Mm-hmm. I think no matter where you are on the political spectrum, and no matter how you feel about society, the point we are at in American society is not good. Right?
I think most and so, people feel that
and
way.
And so to look behind us and try to do more of the same would be the definition of insanity.
Insanity.
Right? To look forward and invite people in that have new ideas and big dreams and believe and are hopeful that American society can become something better, different, more thoughtful, mm-hmm. I think are the people that we need to embrace. And I think that's a problem that people have wrapping their brain around that piece.
I just think it's what's hard for me, Patrice, is, and like I am, you know, I was sort of politically molded by an incredible pacifist named Coleman McCarthy. And Coleman spoke constantly about the prison system and constantly in the same sort of breath, because he's a true pacifist, about the war system in this country and how much we spend on defense versus all of the other countries that are supposedly our biggest enemies around the world. So it's also the hard part for me, Patrice, is why I admire you so much. It's so we can't even get these people to admit that we need fair voting practices for black people.
That's right.
Right? How? And even the people who aren't that bad, right? Even the people who aren't wearing red hats, trying to convince them to even care, right? Because they may not be bad.
Coming off MLK Day, that's who Barton talked about, were the biggest problem.
So getting those people to say, yeah, I guess when I think about it, I would like it to be fair for black people to vote, but I don't care enough to go vote for someone else. Or to, how do you get those people to now go further and say, don't worry about jails. Let's create green spaces, which to me, you know, I hear you and go, yup, that makes sense. They'll go, what? You don't want jail? You want grass? How do you battle against, like, you know, a populace that feels like that just doesn't see it?
Also, just to add on to what he said, Patrice, I feel like a lot of people go into panic mode when anytime anybody says abolish anything, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like to your point, wait, no jail. So what's going to happen with the real criminals? What about the rapists and the child molesters? Right. You're just going to let them run free? People go into panic mode quick.
Immediately. Yes. That's the first place they go.
It's the first place. Yeah. It's like purge in their eyes.
Hot
97 Summer Jam 2024 performing this year.
Yo, it's Doja Cat.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening? Your boy Offset.
I will be live.
June 2nd.
Sexy Red.
This your boy Mac Man.
What's up, rap world? This is Rat Man.
Sleepy Hollow.
Yo, what up, my people? It's your boy David.
T. Grizzly. 41. Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
I want to address something that you said earlier, Ebro, and then address the other things. But one, I want to make it really clear. Not only am I hopeful and, you know, have like this belief system, but I've been a community organizer for 20 years, and I don't want to brag, but I've never lost a campaign. So there's also effectiveness in this strategy of building an abolitionist framework. There's an efficacy to it,
right?
And it actually changes lives. And then I think this question around how do you convince the people who can't even get us voting rights? I don't think those are the people we're trying to convince. I think what we're trying to do, and it's why I believe so much in the power of local politics. And, you know, if we think about MLK, yes, he fought for voting rights, but he was also a really deeply entrenched local organizer. Mm-hmm. He understood the power of local politics. And so when we dig in, dive in, and challenge our local leaders, which oftentimes you can do more work at the local level, that does impact the national conversation. Will our Congress ever believe in abolition? I don't think so in my lifetime, but hey, lots of things have happened I didn't think would happen. I'm not really interested in the national and trying to convince national leaders. I'm interested in being hyper-local focused and using that as a strategy to impact the national conversation. So, you know, that feels really important to me. I'm thinking as a strategist as I enter into these conversations around abolition. And then, you know,
and as a pragmatist who wants to get things done, like that's actually a realistic way to approach it.
That's exactly right. Yes. I want to change conditions. And I know that in the last 20 years, what has Congress changed, you know? And this isn't something that this is not like a Patrice diss. Many people have asked this throughout the last 100 years. Yes, Congress is a really challenging place. But this question around what do we do with people who cause real harm is a great question. It's a question we should be thinking about more because there are some answers to that. One, there's a concept called transformative justice, which is not retributive justice or punishment based. I think one thing people need to understand is abolition does not mean lack of accountability. In fact, I would argue that abolitionists really believe in real and true accountability. Real and true accountability means the person that caused harm, one, will transform and never cause that harm again, because that's ultimately what we want. Correct. If someone causes harm, we don't want them to do it again, and we want them to transform. But also, in an abolitionist framework, we are actually meeting people's needs. People sometimes cause harm and violence because they need to eat, they need to feed their children, they've been abused or harmed.
Hurt people.
We're also trying to look at the root of what causes social ills inside of abolition and work on that. One great example, in Trieste, Italy. What's Trieste, Italy? It's a small town in Italy, and it's one of the places that has completely decriminalized mental illness. It is not a crime to be mentally ill. They do not lock people up who are mentally ill. Instead, they've created an entire society that has a public health system. Imagine that. Where the government is actually taking care of people with mental illness. Folks are not locked away in hospitals. They're not locked away in jails. There's multiple clinics. Folks with mental illness are working at coffee shops. They've really created an entire town that is addressing what happens to people with mental illness. They are the model for the world on how to deal with mental illness. And right now, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, that system is under attack by the right wing.
Yep.
And so we have to, you know, see those models, try to bring them back home. But then we also have to fight for them because, as we know, the right wing is wreaking havoc around the world.
Well, and most of that is tied to money, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's 100%. The more you can throw people away and put them in institutions, the more you can monetize those institutions. You can monetize the drugs and the things that you give to these individuals. You can monetize, you know, and make money on the people you pay to be militaristic in their approach to dealing with these individuals.
It's a very easy sell.
It's a racket.
It's a really easy sell to the public, too, because obviously the easy way to think is like, well, hey, if people are potentially dangerous, you have to lock them away.
Well, and I'm glad you said easy. And Patrice, I'm glad you used the word work earlier, because one of the things that as we go down this path of thinking different over the next generation, right, because, you know, people like Patrice, thought leaders like Patrice and individuals who are putting these ideas out to be consumed and putting them in play in local politics, we're talking about doing work. This isn't just a build a building, put some bars up, and throw people away.
That's right.
As a society, this involves actual work. And you know what Americans really don't like doing? Work. So there's a cultural change that has to take place amongst all of us.
Yeah.
Right? To either get out of the way and let That's people right. who are ready to do the work to improve things, improve
That's
things.
Right. That's
or
right.
get off your hands and get off your ass, learn and do some work.
That's right.
Absolutely. I mean, and I know we're being we're oversimplifying, I think, for the sake of trying to digest this new way of thinking, right? And get yes. people on the road to understanding. But it is hard work too, right, Patrice? Like the reconditioning, the reprogramming of society, individual by individual and community by community, is a heavy undertaking.
Yes. I mean, the biggest reason why I wrote this book was because I felt I'm really worried. I'm really worried about where we're going as a human species. I'm worried about how we relate to each other, how we treat each other. I'm worried about, you know, from the interpersonal dynamics to the larger systemic dynamics. It's a, can I curse?
Yeah, go ahead. It's fucked up.
Yeah, it's fucked up. It's a shit show right now. And so, you know, after I wrote the memoir, you know, that memoir was really an intervention. But this is another intervention. It's like, hey, y'all, like, I know you've heard this term. I know it can be really scary. I know that's focused a lot on police and imprisonment. That's partly true. But I'm also really pushing us to build a new culture. For me, abolition is really creating a culture of care. The current culture we live in is a culture of punishment, retribution, revenge. And we see that in all of the dynamics, right? We have to build a new culture in order to build a new world. Institutions are made of people. And many of the institutions, you know, I just read a Teen Vogue article where bosses are begging their workers not to test because they don't want them to test positive, so that they don't want to know if they've tested positive, so they can't, you know, so they don't go.
Oh, yeah,
to work.
Yeah, you know how COVID works. No test, no COVID. No test, like, no COVID, no hospital, no death. I mean, what have we been doing this whole time?
Right.
Yo, and these are like young people being brought up in this pandemic where they're being told by their bosses, we don't care about your health. All we care about is this building, this retail system. Like, how devastating, how traumatizing is that? And so I think I'm also really trying to challenge what our understanding of care is. Abolition really calls for a new understanding of care and how we treat one another.
I'd also like to point out another thing that Patrice, when she talked about local government, she talked about communities. A lot of this also is it's okay to start local and small and individualistic. It's yes. okay to be like, we can't do it. You know what I mean? So for people out there that are scared of this conversation, it ain't all going to happen at once.
No.
It's okay to come along on the journey of learning. And the other thing, too, is as a society, we have to learn what Patrice is talking about is emotional intelligence.
Yes.
That's the hard part.
Right. And that's one of those starting points where you like when you have emotional intelligence, which we're not raised in this society to have many, especially most men, for that matter.
Yeah.
Is to be aware of your own emotions and someone else's, to understand That's what right. they're going through, to be empathetic and care. Like these are things that our society just does not celebrate. We celebrate right. American society celebrates the machine of capitalism. The yep. machine of war,
yeah,
and you know, and the machine of imprisonment.
Well, yeah, that's why. I mean, yes.
And
they
death.
Love, they, people love punitive, you know, responses to things like
absolutely.
It's the cops chasing down the bad guy. It's cops and robbers. That's basic.
That's exactly right.
You know,
that's exactly right.
Well, listen, you are doing the Lord's work, Patrice. This is awesome stuff. We're excited about this book.
Thank you, team.
Go pick this up, an abolitionist handbook. Come on the journey. Do not be afraid. It'll take a generation. We're talking about generational work, by the way.
We are.
I know in many corporations, because I've been a part of these conversations, corporations are being forced to do this work as well at the highest mm-hmm. level, whether you're talking about Apple, Facebook, Google, Amazon. Like, it's happening in workplaces. It should be happening in your communities, too. It should be happening in our schools, too. Like, it should be happening everywhere, because it's going to take us generations to get to this place where we can be better. If people truly believe we can be better as human beings.
That's exactly right.
You know what I'm saying? Patrice, we love you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Patrice. Thanks,
love y'all, fam. Thank you so much. Enjoy Peace. The day.
We'll you see too. You next time.
Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024 performing this year.
Yo, it's Doja Cat.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening? Your boy Offset.
I will be live
June 2nd.
Sexy Red.
This your boy Mac Man.
What's up, rap world? This is Rat Man.
Sleepy Hollow.
Yo, what up, my people? It's your boy David.
T Grizzly. 41. Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
Ebro in the Morning with Laura Stiles and Rosenberg.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Ebro, Laura, and Rosenberg. Welcome to the program. Felicia Snoop Pearson. We call her Snoop. You know her as Snoop from The Wire up here today because we got to talk about Michael K. Williams season 2 on Vice TV, Black Market. Snoop, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Ebro?
How you doing?
Oh, man. Blessed to be here, man.
Yo, it's dope. You showing up for your bro, Michael K. Williams.
All the time.
All the time. It's very dope. I know he, the first season, Black Market, was fire. Laura, you've been watching the second season.
Yes, I caught the first episode of the first season, and it was so good. I was instantly hooked. I didn't know what to expect at the beginning. And then I was like, oh, great. The type of access that Michael had to a lot of these stories and the people who are living these lives is really amazing.
Yeah, the underground world. That's what we call it, the underground world.
Mm. I mean, and Snoop, I mean, it's a real thing. You come from the street too. But talk about Michael K. Williams as a human being that you got very close to when y'all filmed The Wire. And just, you know, he comes from the real world too, just like yourself. And y'all was able to really keep those connections and access and share those stories.
Mike was just an all-around, just amazing guy, you know. If you come in contact with him, you know what type of feeling or expression that you get from him. You know, like, he wore so many hats, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just out of this world, you know? So, you know, if I could sit here and name everything that Mike, you know, was into and what type of person he was, I'd be here all day, man. Mike was just amazing. Amazing actor. Amazing guy, man. Like, it's just hard. It's just hard to put a title or just to describe him, because he was just amazing.
Can you take us through your memories of when you first connected with him? And he put you on to The Wire, right?
Yeah, he brought me on to the set. He brought me on to the set of The Wire. And I met Michael K. Williams at Club One in Baltimore. And he was looking at me crazy. So, you know what I mean? I started looking at him crazy. You know, I'm from the streets. Don't look at me like I'm just, you know, ready to do something to you, because I'm going to try to do something to you before you try to do something to me. You know what I'm saying? So he was just looking at me. I wasn't watching The Wire. I was in the streets. And my homeboy that I was with was like, yo, nah, that's Michael K. Williams. You know what I mean? Omar, the nigga that on The Wire. And I was like, oh, all right. So I let my guards down a little bit. So he came up to me, introduced himself and all that, asked me my name and all that. Because he didn't know that I was a girl or boy. You know what I'm saying? So okay. He asked me my name and all that. He was like, yo, I love your swag. You know, give me your number. And we exchanged numbers. He called me and he asked me where Moffitt and Landville was. And I was like, that's like a block, two blocks away from me. And he was like, man, come on a set. So got myself together and went on set, and I was just talking and stuff. Excuse me. I was talking and stuff, and I think Ed Burns and Nina and David Simon and George was walking past his trailer, and they heard me talking, and they just circled back and started asking me questions. And I seen these, just no offense, I seen these white people, you know what I mean, keep asking me questions. I'm like, man, well, nah. They, and people had to explain to me, because I'd never been on no movie set or no TV set. So, you know, and that's how that kicked off.
Wow. So he just met you, thought you were interesting, wanted to bring you around, and I'm guessing you would say that moment kind of changed your life forever.
He's saying all the females on me. You know what I mean? You know. So
yeah,
he came over there.
It was the swag. So when he saw that, he had to figure out what was going on.
Right.
So would you say though, Snoop, looking back at that, how much did your life change after becoming Snoop on the Wire?
Man, it became, it wasn't my life no more. You know what I'm saying? Everything's just out there. Who the hell is this? That's what people want to know. Who's this? Why she sound like that? You know, people had to put captions on their TV to understand what I was saying back then. You know, and Mike, that's why I love my brother so much, because I didn't understand the industry or whatever. Like I said, I was coming from the streets. I didn't give a fuck about nothing. Excuse my language. I could cuss.
Mm-hmm. You're good.
But, it happened already.
and he pulled me to the side. Was like, man, listen, you know, I'm going to set you up with a speech coach, you know what I mean? So you could go in and just, you know what I mean? So you could pronunciate words clear. And you hear how I'm talking now, you know? Little things clear here, man.
Yo, when you first started, the way you speak now and the way when we first met you on The Wire, that you Baltimore accent was nothing. So thick. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Too real. Everything was Yadamine, what's up? I still do my little Yadamine, but you know, I clean it up.
That's dope, man.
With the way that you and Mike met, based on your story, it's really a testament of his character too, because he connects to energies.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like you said, he saw you across the room.
I can't understand.
Yeah, and he, you know what I'm saying? He saw you and he connected and he felt something in you. You know what I'm saying? Which is similar to how he's connecting in this black market. A lot of people.
Yeah, he did a lot of people like that, man. Mm-hmm. He turned people into producers, all mm-hmm. types of things. Like, if mm-hmm. you even, I didn't even say to Mike, oh, I got a dream. You know what I mean? I want to be an actor,
right.
Actress, or whatever. It wasn't nothing like that. And, you know, like, it was just, it wasn't nothing but God, man. He had an anointing over top of him. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. he was just a blessed man. You know what I mean? But everybody had their demons. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, he just wore his on his sleeve. He wasn't afraid to talk about his demons. Right. I mean, if you knew him, you knew what was up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know.
Yeah. One of the things, too, I've heard many stories, you know, as of recent, too, that no matter where he was, no matter how much he may have been in a rush or whatever he had to do, if he saw a car on the street and somebody was stuck, he would force whoever he was in the car with to stop and pull over to help that person.
Yeah.
4 a.m, 5 a.m, 3 p.m, it didn't matter. And so many people, when I heard those stories, was like, yo, man, you don't even know. We like, man, we gotta go. We gonna be late. But that's the type of person he was. He always wanted to help. It didn't matter. If somebody was stuck, he'd be like, pull a car over. And we gonna figure it out and we gonna help them get on their way. And that's how he spots certain things. And I'm assuming how this show is going, he's just connecting to certain things that some people don't see that he sees and he believes needs exposure. Is that how the show is? Because I haven't been able to see it myself. But
yeah,
I'm looking forward to seeing
the
it.
The show is definitely him going into underground worlds.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's called Black Market, obviously. These are things that are, you know, not in the mainstream. And
right.
and showing the operations of them and even talking to the people or giving him access to, you know, to understanding who they are and why they're making the... why they're doing the businesses that they're doing.
Right. And that's what he prefers to be. He always liked to be on the ground. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? With the people and connect to the energy that's not pretentious. You know, dance, let his spirit be free. Like, that's just who he was all the time. So this is almost the perfect show, you know, to really kind of carry out his character.
Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024, performing this year.
Yo, it's Doja Cat.
Yeah.
Hey, what's happening? It's your boy Offset.
I will be live
June 2nd.
Sexy Red.
This your boy Meth Man.
What's up, rap world? This is Rat Man.
Sleepy Hollow.
Yo, what up, my people? It's your boy David.
T Grizzly. 41. Hot 97 Summer Jam 2024. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.